Meow.
Meow. Meow, 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 meow.
Worms.
Meow, 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 meow.
Meow,
meow, meow, meow, meow, meow. Freedom Fiends. We're live. This is Mr. Derek J, broadcasting from Pod Bay to Gay. Professional Prisoner Studios. We blast only the highest quality happiness waves out into the atmosphere. This surrounds the globe with good vibrations and forces bad hamsters to surrender. Michael Dean can't be with us tonight. He's building a working broadcast microphone for children in the third world using only sand and water. With me tonight, jabbering coon cat Chandler St. Pierre joins us from the land of Stephen King novels, the great state of Maine.
Yo.
Yo. Worms. Well, we talk about freedom.
It's not so great right now. It's really cold.
Oh, poor baby.
Yeah.
Put on a coat.
I'm not digging winter, I'm telling you.
Oh, grow up. Cut some logs and burn some wood, man. We talk about freedom here and independence. Occasionally we say Obama is a liar, a socialist, and his feet stink. And the state is old and dead. Just not everyone knows it yet. Hey, we're communicating tonight over Skype, Chandler.
Yes, we are.
And that is a cool thing. Skype is a great program. But there's this other cool program called Fiend Phone. Fiend Phone is in, like, Freedom Fiends, F-E-E-N, phone.com is where people can learn more about it. What is it?
Well, it's a, I don't know if I'd call it a replacement. It's a substitute for Skype that has a little bit better functionality. No noise cancellation. We can talk over each other, which is great. And it's designed specifically for point-to-point communication, you know, for podcasting, for radio, for lots of different things. I think it's going to revolutionize the way we communicate as individuals.
I agree. People can donate to Fiend Phone with Bitcoin, and people are already doing that because this is a piece of software that's not out for the public yet. It's still in alpha stage, meaning only the fiends have it. We're looking to communicate using Fiend Phone, possibly for our next episode, Chandler, but we're not there yet. We haven't tested it out. There are still some minor bugs and things to work out, some droppages, which happens in Skype too, but I look forward to using it. I heard the episode with Michael Dean and Ben Stone, the Bad Quaker, yesterday, and it was awesome.
It was great, and Ben's just using the USB 2005.
That's right. It's a popular microphone that's only $50. Anyone can buy it. Pretty much for $50 and this free software, you could run your own professional-sounding podcast radio show.
And sound really good doing it.
Yeah, that's true. So
that's
I look forward to using it. That is part of the mission. It's making the world a better place through good audio. Michael Dean explains Fiend Phone like Skype. Like I don't think he differentiates it enough when he says, you know, it's like it's a communication tool for people across long geo distances. Like, all right, we've got that. It's called Skype. But I think Fiend Phone, he should angle it more towards the audiophiles, because there's lots of people out there who are not just satisfied with hearing you. You want to hear somebody well. And I'm one of those people. I know there's lots of us out there. So Fiend Phone, check it out.
Worms.
Worms. We got some great stories tonight. I am taking the Keene Police, my local police department, all the way to the New Hampshire State Supreme Court. Isn't that cool?
That's pretty cool.
Yeah. Well,
it's always good to test the system.
It's not cool that I have to do it. It costs a lot of money to do. I wouldn't just up and take people to court. That's kind of litigious and mean. But they're kind of forcing me to, because in New Hampshire, it's a shall issue state, meaning if you fill out a one-page form and pay the $10 filing fee or whatever, they give you a concealed carry license, meaning the permission slip to carry a gun in your pocket. And I was denied by the local police here in Keene. They said that I was engaged in assaultive or threatening behavior, which is a total lie. And so now I have to take them to court. I took them to court. I lost.
shockingly enough. And then I had to appeal to a higher level. It's really annoying, but it's fun too. And you can follow along the story. I've been, you know, blogging about each step of the way. I've been taking video in court and updating folks about how the fundraiser is going. If you want to help out, you can do that at derekj.me/cc, as in concealed carry. Well, so that's pretty cool.
It's, you know, the whole shall issue thing is kind of a farce because Maine is a shall issue state. And when I went to get my permission slip to conceal carry a gun, I turned in all the paperwork, and I have no criminal record whatsoever. And the lady that processed the application said, well, it usually takes a month, but you can expect 3 months because we're so backlogged. So many people are applying to carry guns.
Yeah.
All right, cool. So 3 months went by, and I hadn't heard anything. And I called this lady, and I was like, you know, what's going on here? How come you haven't given me my permission slip yet?
Yeah.
And she said, something came up in your file. I was like, all right. And she's, well, you need to talk to this state police.
They didn't call you about that. They were just like, something came up. We should just deny him and then just leave this piece of paper here. Never call him, inform him.
Well, they didn't deny me, though. They, like, something came up and they transferred.
That's like how you avoid a date. Something came up. I don't know.
Yeah, and so they put it on a stack of papers, and it just kind of got lost in the shuffle. So I called the state police that was in charge of investigating.
Yeah,
and you know, he told me that supposedly there was a claim of I don't know, domestic violence or some weird thing.
Yeah, that'll hold you up.
And
you can't even have a gun, right? Or you can't get a concealed carry license if you've been accused of.
I don't think if it's you've been accused.
Oh, convicted or something?
Convicted.
Okay, and the difference is you go through the rigmarole of the court process and everything and get charged and found guilty. Is that the deal?
Yeah, pretty much.
But happened to you.
No, and I told the cop, I said, well, you know, I think you might want to check your files a little bit more because I've never even been to court for anything. You know, I've never even been charged or arrested.
Yeah.
And it was a misunderstanding, I guess.
Really?
You could say. Yeah.
You don't even have one of those names like Bob Smith or whatever. I mean, Chandler St. Pierre, can't imagine how many of those there are.
Right. Well, apparently, I don't know. Somebody had made a false claim and nothing had come of it.
Okay. But they were still we're not so sure. Maybe we should err on the side of caution.
Well, yeah. And I mean, after I talked to the guy, he was like, oh, okay, that's cool. And I'll put your paperwork right on top of the pile. I ended up waiting like another 2 months. It was about 6 months before I actually got it.
Now, when you went to apply, I know you listen to like death metal or something. Don't you wear like black shirts and listen to metal, don't you?
Yes.
All right. Do you think that would hurt your case if you were applying? Did you like dress up for this? Did you put on an act, or were you like, I'm going to go home and listen to some death metal? But I'm not, I am totally legit. You should approve my concealed carry license.
I don't know that I dressed up. I was probably as casually dressed as I normally am. I probably didn't have on a Slayer shirt.
These things shouldn't matter.
But they should.
I think they do.
And they totally do. I mean, appearances are everything.
Yeah.
So,
because they can deny you. Like, they call it a shall issue, right? But what does that mean? If you have to ask permission, it's not shall issue.
Yeah, exactly.
Because it would be a vending machine. If it were shall issue, you know, you would walk up to a vending machine and get one of these licenses. It wouldn't make a difference who you are.
And for me, it just illustrated the ineptitude of the bureaucracy. I mean, there was one person processing thousands of applications. And something comes up, and they didn't even bother to check. Like, if they would have checked and called me, been like, oh, you know, this is what we have, we could have cleared it up in 5 minutes.
They don't have phones yet. This is the government. They're working on 1800s technology.
Right. So I've pretty much resigned myself to the point where in my opinion, for my circumstance, asking for permissions like that seems kind of foolish and unnecessary.
Yeah, I kind of regret it a little bit. I heard it's only like a 1 year sentence and $1,000 fine if I were to concealed carry without the license and be caught, you know, concealing a gun. Oh my goodness. Well,
I mean, as a responsible gun owner, honestly, how would you be caught? I mean, aside from if you were illegal, I could see where that could present an issue.
I was thinking about how can, so I do civil disobedience, and that's the reason why the police denied me, is because they basically say, you know, hey, you have confrontations with police, and they claim they're violent. They never have been, obviously, and you can watch my movie, Derek J's Victimless Crime Spree, free online.
You are about the most non-violent person I know.
Yeah, I'm dedicated to peace. I want a peaceful world, peaceful society. I use peace to achieve peace, and I won't use violence. That's my way. And so it's really confusing to me that the police would deny me, claim that I'm violent, and then that would be upheld in court. But the question down to it, that the state is making, is that like protesters should lose their gun rights, and that's really a concerning precedent for me. Because yeah, okay, people might have an argument to deny Derek J, the activist, because I've been arrested so many times. They're like, oh, clearly criminal record, you know, whatever. But should protesters lose their gun rights? Should people lose the Second Amendment for exercising their First? Which is essentially, I think, the argument that they're making. They're like, well, you have a political statement to make, and you exercise your First Amendment, therefore you lose your Second. That doesn't seem right.
No, it doesn't. And it's been a clear trend for, I'd say, oh, at least 60 years, if not, well, longer. I mean, if you read Unintended Consequences, which is a very, very good book, and I would highly recommend it, you can see that governments in general hate the fact that individuals have the right to defend themselves. You know, you call it the Second Amendment, whatever. And they won't come out and say, well, we're just going to revoke that silly, antiquated, old Second Amendment. But they come up with these conditions, constantly adding conditions. I mean, if we lived in a truly free society, there would be no conditions for owning and carrying a firearm.
Yeah, I agree. The shall not be infringed thing is pretty clear to me, and I don't fall back on the Constitution or the Second Amendment for much, but that language is pretty clear. I'm thinking about ways you can civilly disobey or peacefully non-comply with this concealment. We'll talk about that. Fiends will be right back.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends. Go to freedomfiends.com to help keep it drone-proof.
Meow. Yeah. Fiend Phone. Welcome back, Freedom Fiends. It's Derek J here, the Warrant Canary. Yes, bringing you Obama is a liar, a socialist, and his feet stink radio.
And I could smell him all the way up here in Maine.
Ew. And you've been chopping wood there, Chandler St. Pierre, keeping your home heated independently. Good for you.
Yeah. I'm going to start a little earlier next year. This going out in the woods in the wintertime is not all it's cracked up to be.
That is tough. Do you bring a gun when you go out to chop wood?
Sometimes. I mean, I usually carry a gun on me.
Yeah.
But I'm in town. Like, you know, it's very much like New Hampshire, you know, small towns and stuff. And
the cool things about Freedom Fiends is that normally during the show, one of the co-hosts or one of the hosts has, you know, most people have a gun on them. And that's not normal, I don't think, for most radio shows.
Probably not. I have multiple, like, within reach right now.
Yeah, that makes me feel safe. I just like knowing that you're safe.
Yeah.
So, should protesters lose their gun rights? This makes me think about all those arrests in New York City during Occupy Wall Street, all of the Ferguson arrests, all of the people who are using their words and their peaceful actions to peacefully demonstrate and protest, express their discontent with government actions, and then losing their rights to protect themselves with guns. That concerns me, and I don't want people to lose their rights. So I want to bring this to the Supreme Court in New Hampshire. I don't know if it could even go higher than that. The police here in Keene are trying to deny me my right to protect myself. And, you know, I think it's about me, but it's about everyone, too. Because there's a lot of people getting arrested, a lot of people with criminal records for stuff that involves no victim. Like protesting, disorderly conduct, being arrested. Street. I mean, those people didn't hurt anybody. They should still be allowed to protect themselves with a gun.
Well, what's the book, Three Felonies a Day? I mean, with all the laws out there now, it's almost impossible not to break some statute or some rule or some so-called law that these creatures make up and impose upon us.
Yeah, you're talking about most people commit three felonies a day?
Yeah, without even knowing it.
Yeah, I could believe that. There's a new one here in New Hampshire that I have to pay attention to now. Most people already have this, but now, as of January 1st, the king has decreed a new law, and I must obey. You cannot touch any electronic device while your car is in operation. And if you're under 18, that includes the radio. So you can't even operate the radio in your car if you are a driver who's under 18 in New Hampshire. And if you're over 18, you can't touch even your GPS while you're driving.
So I wonder if the cops are going to start pulling you over each other, you know, for talking on their cell phones, running their laptops, and talking on their CBs and all that stuff.
They are exempt, of course, because they are our benevolent protectors who would never do us harm.
Right.
They are exempt from the rules, and they enforce them on you to keep you safe, but they don't need to follow them because they're plenty safe all the time.
Right. So to me, it's pretty cut and dry. Whenever you have a ruling class that imposes rules upon you but doesn't follow them yourselves, you're a slave.
Yeah, so I'm not going to follow that rule. I'm going to continue to listen to my iPod in the car. Of course, I'll drive safely. I'll keep my eyes on the road, but I think I can do both. I think as a person alive in 2015, I am capable of operating both an iPod and a car.
I would agree.
You know, I can do it safely and responsibly, in violation of the law. Sorry about that.
Well, you know, and I get the whole, like, you shouldn't text and drive, and I'm guilty of it. I've done it more than once, and you shouldn't. It's dangerous. But you should be held accountable.
I just feel you can't make blanket statements like that. Like, you can text and drive when you're at a stoplight, or when you're in a safe place. You know, it's just about using your head and being responsible.
Right, but it shouldn't be mandated by law. There's many actions out there that a responsible individual shouldn't engage in.
Mm.
And if they do, they need to live with the consequences of their actions. But I don't feel there should be a law for it.
Hey,
and I think that's one of the things we try to drive home that people just don't understand.
This is a perfect segue. Tell us about how people in Maine should be personally responsible for their own safety when they go out into the woods.
Okay, so if you go to BangorDailyNews.com, in the opinion editorials, there's a article, Lost and Negligent, Should Maine Charge for Search and Rescue? So, well, I will start this up and get back to taking a pause for a cause.
Worms. We gotta take a trip to the free market. But then we'll be back to talk about the state. Worms.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends. So much truth, it hurts.
Rare.
Worms.
Woof. This is the Freedom Fiends. We're talking about personal responsibility. Should you be held responsible if you get lost in the woods and a rescue team has to come and save you? What do you think, Chandler?
So I'm really torn on this. If you go to BangorDaily.com, there's a article, Lost and Negligent, main charge for search and rescue. And details the story of a Canadian man who didn't return from a hike on Mount Katahdin. And because of this, it's very unclear. Okay. So the park authorities dispatched a search and rescue.
Okay.
And it cost the park authorities $10,000. But there is a paragraph in the article.
That doesn't sound like a lot of money to save somebody. Well, I would pay $10,000 to be saved.
It doesn't, considering, and this is, like, nobody in the comments mentioned this, but this is what scared me the most. One of the instruments issued to help rescue the lost hiker was a Black Hawk helicopter. Apparently, Maine National Guard has its own Black Hawk helicopters. Which,
what makes that a special kind of helicopter? Isn't that the military kind that you would see in, like, World War II movies?
Well, not World War II, like, you know, the movie Black Hawk Down. And
that's it.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, but it's a fairly well-armed military helicopter.
It's a tank in the sky.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, that's what it is. And right. I don't know, just that kind of freaks me out.
Why? They're saving somebody. It's a rescue vehicle. Isn't that what they're supposed to use it for? Would you prefer they use it for war?
No, but there's really not much reason to have a Black Hawk helicopter in Maine. I'm sorry, but I don't see it. I mean,
well, maybe this worked. Maybe this helped. Oh, you're talking about this particular kind of helicopter. It's like, why is it so armored up? Like, you could just use a little drone, like with a little operated with an iPod or something.
Yeah. Well, and so I guess that's neither here nor there. That's just as a side note. It kind of alarmed me. But
No, I see where you're going, because if this were a private park, if this were Chandler's park, you would be employing cost-saving measures like using a drone to save people instead of a Black Hawk helicopter, which is crazy expensive.
Yeah, I mean, I would definitely have little drones scouting the area. And then
smart.
I'd have, a normal, low-maintenance, inexpensive helicopter to go and perform the rescue.
Right.
So there's a part in the story that it kind of makes the whole thing unclear, and it's as follows. Because park rules were not followed, Baxter officials are seeking to recoup the $10,000 spent on the search. This is allowed under park rules. Baxter State Park is run by its own authority, not the Maine Department of Agriculture, Conservation, and Forestry, which oversees the state's parks, public lands, and historic sites.
Why is that confusing to you?
Okay, so the park has its own quote-unquote authority,
yeah,
but it's also still a state park, which falls under the jurisdiction of the Maine Department of Agriculture and Conservation and Forestry.
Oh, so it just
seems a little redundant to me.
So who's in charge here?
Exactly. That's kind of my point.
Yeah.
So the voluntarist anarchist in me would naturally come to the conclusion that, yes, because this gentleman was negligent and got lost. Well, I guess, you know, you can get lost, and that's not necessarily your fault. I mean,
so
if you're
back
out there,
is it one person? Like, one person was out in the woods without a GPS, and he got lost, and they had to save him? Is that the idea?
Well, it was a couple of gentlemen who were hiking and camping, and they didn't get their permit to camp on Baxter State Park.
Oh, you're kidding me. That's all? So when they said, because park rules were not followed, they used that passive tense to hide the fact that they are just being frivolous about the rules here. Because two gentlemen didn't ask our permission, Baxter officials are seeking to recoup the $10,000 spent on the search. So I guess they have to ask permission to use the park if they expect to be saved.
Yeah.
Okay.
And
that's actually not crazy. I mean, if it were a private park, I would expect people check in. Like when I use a private storage unit, you know, there's a code, a little passcode on there. So you have to like check in like, oh, I'm here. You know, if there's a fire, we can rescue you and save you. Like, what's unreasonable about this?
But that's just the thing. This is not a private land matter. This is, so I guess if you believe in that sort of thing, it's public land, right? So
Which is government land.
Right, which is a fiction in my opinion. But so we're getting taxed, right, for multiple reasons. And one of the things they state in these taxes is that, you know, it's going to go to fund operations like this, to rescue people in the state parks who are lost.
Yeah.
So I'm very torn, okay? So this guy, I guess, was a little irresponsible. And he really wasn't, though. Like, it wasn't like he was out drinking or consuming drugs and just kind of got lost. And, you know, he was hiking a trail by himself and climbing a mountain by himself and, you know, managed to get lost and stranded. And
I think this bothers you because you think it could be you. You wouldn't ask permission from the state to go camp there, and then you might get lost.
Yeah.
And you want to be saved, and you don't want to pay for it. Am I right?
Yeah. I guess that's one way of looking at it. I would handle the situation a little bit differently.
You wouldn't get lost.
Well,
you would carry a map and a GPS, right?
I would try. I've been known to get lost more than once. But, you know, I wouldn't hike in unfamiliar territory alone. That's for sure.
Yeah. I don't hike or do anything active ever. So what are your tips for people who do go out into the woods to not get lost? Look at the North Star. Does that help?
I don't really follow that. Bringing a compass with you in the woods, as silly as that sounds, is always good.
Why is that silly? Every Boy Scout needs a compass.
Well, yeah, but people don't do that nowadays. And especially with, I've got a compass on my phone.
Yeah,
guess what?
Until it runs out of battery.
Yeah, until it runs out of battery or there's no signal and your GPS isn't working, which does happen. There's a lot of tips. You know, if you're going into an unfamiliar territory, which I wouldn't advise. I mean, I love to hike and I hike a lot, but it's usually places I'm very, very familiar with that I could hike, you know, at night if I needed to. If you're going into unfamiliar territory, you should always go with somebody who knows the way. And I can say from experience, when you're hiking in the woods, familiar or not, don't just stare at the ground looking for stuff. Be aware of your surroundings and maybe mark a few trees on your way in so you don't get in the middle of the woods and go, wait a minute, where am I? But that's neither here nor there. I don't really think this gentleman was negligent. And seeing
well, how could anyone determine that? That's what I'm wondering. Is like, who says you're negligent? I mean, what if I go in with an iPhone and I say, you know, I had a compass and I ran out of battery. That wasn't negligence, was it?
Yeah, it was foolishness, but
it depends. I mean, it depends who you ask. Some people are going to say, yeah, you owe the $10,000 because you didn't think ahead and you didn't bring a 50-cent compass with you.
Right.
And we had to spend a Black Hawk helicopter and everyone's salaries to go rescue you.
Which I think was a little bit overkill, but that's besides the point. So,
yeah, but who cares? Okay, Chandler, you're out in the ocean drowning and someone rescues you with a yacht versus a tugboat. I mean, I'd pay the $1 million versus the $1,000. It's your life. I mean, it's priceless.
Right. But the thing is, again, we come back to this is public land and we're getting taxed and fined to supposedly subsidize these policies and programs. And then they want to pass that on to the consumer. It's no different than, you know, you pay taxes to maintain the roads and all that. But look at all the revenue generating programs they're doing now, because the taxes we're paying aren't going towards the causes we're told they supposedly go to.
Yeah.
So
there's also no incentive to pay these people. I'm reading from the article. It says that there's no requirement as to the time when the reimbursements are paid. So most people just don't pay. Ever.
Right, and what they would have to do is actually take this guy to court, and I don't think it would muster.
Yeah, and
of course,
they're trying to rewrite state law that requires the fines to be paid, so and then they're going to set penalties, so this guy could end up in jail for not paying.
Right, so of course the solution by this lawmaker, and he's been in some of the constitution-humping circles, I recognize this name, and David Trahan, executive director of the Sportsman's Alliance of Maine.
Okay.
So he offers a suggestion that a system be created whereby people who act irresponsibly would be fined, and this would be determined by a three-member board made up of the head of Maine Warden Service, which
that
kind of makes sense to
me. No, that sounds positively Stalin-esque. There's a three-member board. Some faceless bureaucrats decide whether you're responsible or not.
No, you misunderstand me. The panel idea, I think, is horrible, but if you were forced to have this, you know, by law, I could see where having the head... Well, I don't know if I'd say the head of the Maine Warden Service. I'd say an experienced warden. Because a lot of the people that work for the Warden Service are experienced.
Wait a minute. What's a warden? Isn't that someone who watches a jail?
Yes.
So why would this matter? Why would the Maine Warden Service have anything to say about what happens in a park?
Well, because a lot of the, like I was saying, a lot of the wardens are actually experienced woodsmen, hunters, hikers, fishermen, that sort of thing. They know the territory. So I guess if you're relying on some authority that has credibility, they would have a little bit. Although, generally speaking, I think the head of any government branch is usually very inexperienced. It's a lot like the corporate world where the CEO knows nothing of the day-to-day activities.
Yeah,
but we digress. So it would be, you know, the head of the Maine Warden Service, a retired judge or attorney, which red flag, and a representative of recreational interests, which that says nothing. That could be anyone. I'm a representative of recreational interests. Do I get to be on this panel?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe you could. Maybe it could be the swing vote.
Right. So this panel would be established to determine whether somebody was negligent or not. And if they determine negligence and not just bad luck was a factor, the panel would then assess a fine, and state law would need to be written to require those fines to be paid with set penalties for not paying.
Worms. I don't know what I think about this. This panel seems like they would punish people more often than not. Worms.
See what happens.
You're listening to the Freedom Fiends, and I'm beaming these words into your cerebellum.
Woof. Freedom Fiends, we return from our trip to the free market, talking about state parks, Baxter State Park, where one man is being fined $10,000 for the cost of his own search and rescue. Was he negligent? Does it matter? And what's the solution in a free society? I ask you, Chandler St. Pierre.
Well, again, I would say, given that this is public property and it's a state park, I think that the cost shouldn't be passed on to this individual. I also don't believe, based on the information in the article, that the guy was negligent. Hmm. I mean, accidents do happen, and we should have certain measures in place. Now, if this were private land, I think that you would purchase insurance of some sort to, hey, you know, what if I got injured while hiking, or what if I got lost while I was hiking? You would make a, you know, some sort of insurance payment, and that would, maybe you'd have like yearly memberships to these private parks, and the membership fees and things like that would go to fund these search and rescue operations. And I can also guarantee you that they wouldn't cost $10,000 for a few hours' work.
No, what does AAA cost? I mean, that's the same thing, but on the road and parks, you know, you would think. So I guess it's a little more difficult to reach people in the park, so it'd probably be a little more expensive. Nathan in the chat had a cool idea explaining that he's visualizing a privately run kiosk at the foot of a mountain where you can get a free compass and have the opportunity to buy rescue insurance with Bitcoin.
There you go. See that? And that's what I'm talking about. I think there would be much, much better solutions. And I think that the warden's service, a private warden service, would be much more effective. Now, you know, it's really kind of frustrating, too, because Most of the funds for the Department of Inland Fisheries and Wildlife, which handles this sort of thing, most of their funds come from hunting and fishing licenses, which,
yeah,
by the way, some of us don't believe in and don't obtain.
You're not doing your fair share, might claim.
I don't admit to that. I'm just saying there are some people that don't believe in that and don't partake in that system. But, you know, if you play by the rules and whatever, and you want to get permission from the king to hunt on the king's land every year, you know, you have to pay this tax.
It sounds like that insults you. Sounds like you're above this permission slip for hunting.
It insults the Native American heritage and blood in me that I would have to
pull in the race card.
Yep.
Interesting. I didn't see that coming.
And even if I wasn't, you know, partially Native American, to ask permission to do an activity that is not immoral, that has been done for thousands of years, just seems rather absurd to me.
You know, I think that gets to the point, though, which is, who owns the land? If it wasn't the Native Americans, if it's not the people who live there now, you know, apparently the government owns the land, and they call it public property. I've stopped referring to, I mean, I try to stop, it still squeaks out in my language occasionally, but I try to stop saying public property, public schools, because what they really are government schools. They're not very public. I can't walk into public schools. You know, you try and walk into a public school, you'll get turned right around. You're not allowed without permission.
What will happen is the school will get locked down. I mean, we just had that. Supposedly, a suspicious person was walking the grounds out back on one of the local schools, and they literally locked the school down.
Yeah, I mean, it happens all the time. Parents go to pick up their kids. They're not doing anything suspicious. They're just picking up their kids at school, and then the school gets put on lockdown because they're like, an unknown minivan drove through the school. Like, you know, so anyway, I don't call them public property. I don't call them public schools. They're government schools. We know that because look what happens when you try and treat it like you own it.
They're not schools either. They're indoctrination centers.
Well, fair enough. So, worms, we can be free without the state. We don't need them to manage our parks. I think we could do that on our own.
Much more effectively.
And it sounds like they're kind of double dipping here. Like they charge for the taxes for the search and rescue. And then they're like, okay, now we search and rescued you. Now you owe us more money. Didn't I already pay for that? Well, it couldn't happen with private industry. At least there would be some kind of remedy. With the state, you're at the end of the rope.
And there wouldn't be some three panel
worms. But we got some good news coming up about how you can empower yourself through technology
and alternative systems.
Ooh. Coming up, Freedom Fiends. Worms, worms. Meow, 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 meow. Derek J. and Chandler St. Pierre.
Yeah.
Obama is a liar, a socialist, and his feet stink. Yeah, personal responsibility.
That's just the condition of working in
That's DC. The condition, yeah, that's D.C. for you. So, Chandler, we just had a long break. Are you safe? Have you been contacted by the government?
I'm safe, and no one's contacted me.
Good. I'm safe. I have not been contacted by the government. I would not respond. Yeah, you're right.
I just kind of tune that stuff out. Like, I got to thinking about it today. You know, I live in Maine, and I think people that don't live in Maine probably have an odd view of Maine.
I picture everyone holding an axe with one hand and reading a Stephen King novel in the other.
Yeah, well, that's it. And by the way, I'm actually not reading a Stephen King novel right now. I'm reading Anne Rice's new novel.
Oh, there you go.
Prince Lestat, which is amazing. I'm a huge Anne Rice fan. I've actually met her, and she signed one of my books, and yeah, she's great.
You're gushing.
Yeah, her new novel is spectacular because I haven't read it's one of the Vampire Chronicles, and I haven't read those since I was in, like, I don't know, middle school.
Who is this person? What kind of stuff does she
even
write?
Never read Anne Rice?
Maybe I have. I don't even know.
Well, you know that horrible, horrible movie Interview with the Vampire?
Yeah.
That was the first book to that series.
The
books are amazing. She's a very good writer. And she's written, she wrote the Witching Hour series, which deals with supernatural stuff. And she's also, she converted to, or got back to her Christian roots. And she wrote a couple of really good books about Jesus when he was in exile in Egypt, the story of him growing up. And
that's cool.
She's written a lot of different stuff. But anyway, so yeah, I'm reading that, and it's really cool.
So you don't read Stephen King?
Oh, I do. I've read most of his books. Not all of them, but most of them.
How did this even come up? We were supposed to talk about Social Security numbers.
Right. Well, we're talking about the misconceptions of Maine.
Oh, right, right, right.
Right. So, but I was just going to say, like, I wouldn't respond if I was contacted. And looking at my Facebook feed every day, it's all tyranny and police abuse and this and that. And it's very strange to me because I don't see a lot of that in my day-to-day life. I think a lot of it I wouldn't say ignore, but I don't participate in. And the tyranny hasn't quite reached the level in Maine that it has in other areas.
So
I guess I'm fortunate for that. I mean, we still have, you know, the black and white, you know, armored vehicles. I think they're called cop cars.
But tyranny, we still have those. Tyranny concentrates in population centers. I mean, for obvious reasons, it's easier to control a population in those places.
Right. So. So when you have a more sparsely populated area, it's not so bad.
Plus, and it's not just sparsely populated, it's people with independent minds. Like, you go and chop your own wood, you're independent, you know, you're not counting on the government goons to give you what you need.
Well, it's very interesting though, because I've always believed that there's a streak of independence from people in Maine.
Like that geography is special.
No, just the lifestyle.
Hi.
You know, especially in the Northeast, it's a little bit more rough sometimes.
Yeah.
With the weather and the lack of modern infrastructure, I guess you could say, although that doesn't really apply so much anymore.
It's still kind of the new world. Isn't that one of the places where the people who were exploring in, like, the explorers period of human history, where they landed and they were like, oh, we could call this the new world. It's like Nova Scotia and Maine and all those places are still kind of undeveloped. They're still kind of the new territory, aren't they?
Well, it depends on where you go. I mean, there's definitely you know, if you're in southern Maine in Portland, it's Portland's like a miniature Boston. It's a really nice place to visit. You know, I like going up there for concerts, which I'm doing next week for my daughter's birthday.
But they're nowhere near as tyrannical as Boston.
Right. In fact, you know, I went to an Occupy Wall Street protest rally thingy in Portland.
Yeah.
And the cops just kind of sat to the side and watched and kind of were amused. I actually went up and talked to a bunch of them because that's what I do. You know, I engage these guys. And
verbally.
You know, verbally, in a polite and friendly manner, trying to get them to just think a little, you know, outside of what they consider normal. And, you know, of course, I was open carrying too, which was...
What do they think of that?
Some cops are really cool with it. I think I've told the story before of when I was confronted by police at my daughter's softball game for open carrying. Some are really cool. Some are not. I know there's that fairly popular video that's floating around the internet of Portland police confronting a man open carrying, and he totally schools these cops.
Awesome.
Like, with law, like statutes and, you know, all the technical stuff.
He uses his Jedi mind tricks and references legal cases.
Yeah, he does.
They back down. Whoa, this guy might be a lawyer.
And they do. And but, I mean, you don't see that a lot yet because we still have a lot of older cops. Sometimes it's the younger ones, I think, that tend to be a little more indoctrinated, although that's not always the case. I've had experiences with younger cops that have been somewhat positive.
So what does this have to do, and I am curious about it, it is fascinating, but does it have anything to do with Social Security numbers? Or is it just the people of Maine are independent and they don't get Social Security numbers?
I wish that were true.
You have kids. Did you get Social Security numbers for your kids?
Oh, of course I did.
Well, what happened to Mr. Independent-Minded?
Well, Mr. Independent-Minded did not know what he knows today 15 years ago.
Fair enough.
That's for sure.
Yeah.
And
Would you have, knowing what you know now?
Probably not, but then there's also the thing to consider when you're with somebody and you have a child, you both have to be on the same page and have a consensus as to what's going to be productive for the life of that child.
Yeah.
I would personally think that the child should have a choice. The way I would handle it nowadays, if I was in that situation, was I would not get a Social Security number for my child. And then when my child comes of age, I would present him or her with all the information and be like, this is your choice. You can choose to have a slave number if you want, because it definitely does make life more convenient. You know,
is it a choice? Did you even know that it was a choice when you got your children one?
I didn't know when I got my child one, but shortly after,
oh, that wasn't mandatory.
Yes.
I did that by accident because they asked me to.
Right.
Who asked you, by the way? I mean, I don't have any kids. I don't know how it works. So at the hospital, you have this new baby. You're like, this is wonderful. The happiest day of my life. And some doctor walks in or a nurse and says, like, here, Chandler, sign here, 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 and here. And your child will now have a 9-digit number to describe him for the rest of his life.
Well, no, they don't come in with the Social Security stuff when you're in the hospital. They do come in with a birth certificate, and that's a whole nother issue. I don't even want to get into that right now, but... No. But they're not mandatory, and that's why they don't come in the hospitals and say, here's your app. I think nowadays they actually do give you the application, and I believe they actually did back then, but they never presented it as, you know, you're not leaving the hospital until you get this, which has happened in more recent years with both Social Security numbers and birth certificates. In fact, I mean, there are people that have gotten their kids taken away because they refused to go to the hospital and do that. They had natural home birth and didn't apply for any of those silly papers, but that's another show topic.
Social Security is super offensive to me because it presumes, like, that, I don't know, the lie is that you will pay into this system and then you'll get money back later when you're old. But,
and did you know that that's not how Social Security started?
No, tell me more.
Okay, so when Social Security was first passed, it was not mandatory. Your employers were not mandated to extract that wealth from you. You actually bought bonds.
What?
Yes.
Okay, so why do you need a Social Security number to buy bonds? Oh, that was just like an extra rule that they invented? Like, you can buy these super cool bonds we have, but you need to sign up for our new program. Social Security Administration.
You didn't need to have a Social Security number when the Social Security Act was first passed either. And you still, to this day, don't need to get one.
Right. And, there are some activists I know who don't have Social Security numbers.
Yes. And a lot of times they are mislabeled as, sovereign citizens and all that. And that's not necessarily true.
But it makes life impossible. I mean, you can't get a driver's license.
Well, that's the thing.
There's only one state you can get a driver's license, I think, in one state without a Social Security number.
Well, the Social Security number is the foundation of, and I don't want to sound too conspiratorial, but it's the foundation of the control system. It's a number.
Totally sounds conspiratorial.
I know it does, but if you think about it for a minute in a rational manner, okay, everybody or many people have these numbers, and it's a way for government agencies and private agencies to catalog and track people. Now, sometimes that doesn't mean it's all nefarious. I mean, you know, think about it. You have to give a Social Security number to get a cell phone plan, which is a totally voluntary act. You know, it's a way of verifying your identity.
It's not a very good one.
No, it's not, because think about how many Social Security numbers are faked and stolen every year.
Well, how does a number even identify you? I mean, that doesn't tell me anything about you, Chandler. Like, if there were a thumbprint that went with it or that sealed the number, I don't know. Like, we've got cryptography today, and it just seems like we should move on to better technology.
Well, and that's where I want to go with this, okay? Without getting into all the detail and minutia, we know that Social Security numbers aren't mandatory, but try to get a job without them. It's very, very difficult.
Yeah.
So we need to develop and foster alternative systems of barter, trade, work, where that is not required.
I think I'm going to burn my Social Security card like the feminists in the 70s burn their bras.
There you go.
You're listening to The Freedom Fiends, an invigorating alternative to those other shows.
Worms, 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 worms.
What does this word
mean? Meow! Meow! Meow, meow, meow. Freedom Fiends. Do you have a Social Security number? Some
and
people
why?
Don't. Yeah, and why? Why do you still have one?
Yes. I have a Facebook friend, right? And he's a good guy. I really like this guy. Him and I get into tiffs back and forth about he tends to knock the cyber anarchists. He's a state national, and Michael and I have talked about that.
Is, is your friend Uncle Sam?
No. He believes in the anti-federalists' perspective of
what
government.
What is that?
You have never read the anti-federalist papers?
That was like a thing from Alexander Hamilton.
No, that was the Federalist Papers, which those people were evil. The anti-federalists were our
Thomas Jefferson.
Yeah, but
I'm striking like out Thomas, here. Help me. What
Thomas
is this?
Paine, Samuel Adams.
Oh yeah, those guys. They were our
brethren in the fact that a lot of those guys, when they wrote the anti-federalist papers, predicted exactly what the federal beast has become now. They were very concerned. They didn't like the Constitution. They didn't like how they saw government growing even in 1789.
Yeah, even then. I have a quote from Sam Adams that I'd like to read. "If ye love wealth better than liberty, the tranquility of servitude better than the animating contest of freedom, go home from us in peace. We ask not your counsel or arms. Crouch down and lick the hand which feeds you. Exactly. May your chains set lightly upon you, and may posterity forget that ye were our countrymen."
Yep. And
that's a strong statement.
Yeah. And those were the cats that wrote the anti-federalist papers, and they wrote them under pseudonyms. They didn't, you know, a lot of them didn't publish their real names because these ideas, though they were very valid and I think correct, they were very controversial too.
And yeah, so they would be targets.
They would be targets. They would be ostracized. So anyway, yes, this gentleman was just talking about the anti-federalist papers today, and I was like, oh yeah, I have a audio file of all of them on my iPod that I listen to from time to time.
That is so cool.
Now, yeah, because they're very hard to read. Language of that day, I mean, I respect the proper use of language and its history and origins, but it's really hard to read that stuff. I mean, let's be honest.
Well, is it converted into modern English, or is it just easier to understand when it's spoken?
It's just easier to understand when it's spoken.
I follow. I've often been terrified. Like, what if I step into a time machine and get transported to a time in history and then can't really, like, speak the language, even though it's English, you know? Yeah. Like, wouldn't that be scary? I feel like I would end up in jail.
You probably would. You'd be burned at the stake for being a witch or something.
Oh, yeah.
So, this gentleman... And despite our ideological differences, we do agree on certain things. And he doesn't have a social security card.
Cool.
Now, that being said, he has stated it is extremely hard for him to get employment.
Why do that then? Isn't it worth it to just kiss the ring, comply, well, do what the master wants you?
I guess it's a matter of principles and how, and I'm not dissing people. I have a social security card, so I'm obviously not dissing people that have them.
It's a personal cost-benefit thing, right?
Right. How much do you want to abide by your principles? In principle, I'm opposed to this, but in practicality, given that I didn't have a choice and I had one given to me when I was a very young age... Yeah, I just deal with it.
In the very least, it seems like these shouldn't be foisted upon children without their consent. Like, you could get your own social security number when you're 17 and you have to take 18, the SATs, right? So you're like, okay, they are asking me to get a social security number. I choose to do that now instead of your parents being like, here's your number, kid.
Exactly. And I guess I could go along with that because then it would be your choice if you were fully informed. So he doesn't have one, and he has admitted that it is very difficult to get employment and driver's licenses and all that to be part of our everyday system. Now, when you say that you don't want these, people, their immediate reaction is, well, why can't you just go along? Why do you have to be different?
Why do you think that is?
I think for a lot of people, it's an ideological difference, and they see that as a, rightly so, as a form of slavery, and they don't want to partake in it.
I don't know. I sort of think of it like the Dr. Seuss book about the stars on Mars. Like, why don't you have a star? Everyone else has one. Maybe you're worse. Maybe you're evil and bad because you're different.
Yeah. Well, that's the way they look at it.
Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean. This is what radio sounds like now.
Worms. Meow, meow. Meow, meow. Meow, meow. Freedom Fiends. To tase you with liberty. So, hey, Chandler, we're talking about social security numbers and how they're not really mandatory and they don't seem to help us or do anything except we need them for jobs so that the government can take our income.
Yeah, it's we need them so that we can be cataloged and tracked and all that. And now... So people will say, why can't you just go along? This is the way it's always been done. Well, I have a problem with that. I think if, and it doesn't have to be just liberty-minded folks. I think if there are folks out there who believe that the current system is flawed and needs to be changed for what, you know, whatever stripe they are.
I don't think you'll find anyone who disagrees with that. I think everyone says the system is flawed, right? One's like, hey, the status quo is the best we could ever get. And well, nothing's ever going to improve.
I think there's like five people that say that.
Yeah. They're at the top.
Right. So, you can't get a job, right, without a social security card. And, of course, it's to protect us from those darn illegal immigrants stealing all our jobs, which is complete and utter nonsense.
I suppose you could work for yourself and you wouldn't need a social security number.
Well, yeah. There's issues with that. If you're self-employed and you don't file taxes.
Oh, right. I presume there are some other rules about that. This is not legal advice. I am not a lawyer.
I know an individual who's self-employed and hasn't filed taxes in quite some time.
I think that's pretty common, actually. But there's millions of Americans who don't file every year.
But you got to remember, along with that, if you try to go and get any of the benefits, and I'm not just talking welfare or anything.
Like a passport.
Right. Any of those supposed benefits of the state, if you haven't filed your proper papers and you don't have your proper papers, you're going to find yourself in a lot of trouble. So you have to tread carefully.
Yeah, that's a new rule. Did you know that, Chandler? By the way, sorry to interrupt, but did you know that's a new rule as of, I think, this year or last? The processing for passports goes to the IRS now?
Yeah, I heard somebody
talk about that. So they check to see how much you owe to determine whether or not they're going to let you leave the country.
Well, they don't want you leaving the tax farm unless you've paid all your fines and your fees and your, you know, whatever.
Right.
So I think you get a bunch of people that agree that the system is flawed and it needs to be reformed. Now, we're not going to go into specifics because there's so many different ideologies out there. Well, we should do this and we should do that. Okay. Let's not go there yet. Let's not get ahead of ourselves. How about first we create a network whereby people can be employed without having to have these identification cards?
Okay. What does that look like? What kind of network?
Well, I mean, think about it. It's already there. And I'll give you a very simple, simple example. It snowed last night, right?
Yes.
And my plow guy came and plowed my driveway today.
Got it.
So, and I paid him a fee for his service. We engaged in commerce. And I consider him, I guess he's kind of like an employee to me because we have an understanding that when it snows a certain amount, this gentleman will come and plow me out. I don't have to call him and ask, you know.
This sounds like a personal arrangement. This is not a company.
No, this is not a company.
This is your neighbor, and you're like, okay, right. I'll pay you, dude, so come and mow my lawn or plow my snow.
But I am still technically, by technical standards, an employer for him. I didn't ask him for a Social Security card.
Right.
I didn't ask him for tax statements or verification of his identity. He told me his name. He showed me what he could do. And I was like, yeah, man.
Oh.
And he said, here's what I charge.
So I kind of see what you're saying. So it would be sort of like,
we adopt more of those systems. And, you know, this stuff, the argument I hear when I talk about free societies, anarchic societies, that sort of thing. And I talk about the problems that we face now and how they're so horrible and what one of my suggestions are to overcome them. The main thing I always hear, Derek, is, well, it'll never be like that. People just won't go along with that.
Well,
and that frustrates me.
We got to try it out.
Exactly. And
let it fail.
Me.
If it's such a bad idea, it'll fail, but let's at least try freedom. It hasn't been tried yet.
And the thing is, whenever you're trying to implement new systems and you're going against the status quo or the structure as it is, there are a certain amount of risks involved. So you have to do that whole cost-benefit analysis of how far you want to go. There are going to be individuals that are going to go a lot farther than you, and that's okay. Everyone should have their place. But if we start developing these barter, trade, these employment opportunities that don't require your papers, please. You know, I think we'll start to see things change. Now, people would say, well, you know, I can't have a business and write a check to my employee if they don't have a Social Security number and I don't have them enrolled in income tax deductions, yada, yada, yada. Well, sure you can. We've got a thing called Bitcoin now and several other cryptocurrencies. Why can't we use those?
I don't know. I would think, so I know a little bit about this. I worked at an accounting firm as my first job, and it's my understanding that there are pretty much only two payroll companies in the U.S., and you just sign up with one of those. So if you're ready to start up a new business, you want to open a thrift store in Keene, let's say, you can sign up with one of these two companies, you send them all your info, and then they handle all your paychecks and paperwork and stuff. And so it just makes it easy for the employer to not have to handle it himself, and he doesn't have to calculate, like, how many bitcoins do I owe my employees this week? Like, there's just,
Right.
It's probably easier.
There's not just two. I know because Michael and I were talking on a past show about a online service that's offering that for free. And if you do the paid service, they offer a little bit more. But they're actually getting sued by the state because they're providing such a good service for free.
Wow.
Yeah, no.
But you're right. Bitcoin is an alternative. If employers are like, all right, gee, I really want to have this employee. He doesn't have the correct government paperwork, but we need him. You know, he has the talent or the skill or the time or whatever. So you want to compensate this person off the books. You think Bitcoin is the way to do that? I mean, isn't that the most on the books payment method ever?
I don't know. I'm just saying that's an alternative to the current system of, you know, signing up on payroll companies and paying people with Federal Reserve notes. I mean, I'm sure there's a plethora of ways that we haven't even considered. Because think about it. Like,
I've been paid in silver. That's an alternative currency.
It is, and it works really well.
My employer was like, you know, hey, we're short on cash. I was like, I'll take silver. I was like, cool. There you go.
Right.
And you can just work it out.
And I think that's the thing. We shouldn't, as individuals who want to start businesses and companies, we shouldn't be forced into a system that only works one way. And that way benefits, I hate to use this terminology, but benefits the people in high places that direct activities.
The system, man.
The system, yes, yes. So why can't we develop new systems? Like, you know, we always refer to the analogy of the horse and buggy manufacturers, you know, trying to legislate cars so that they didn't proliferate. Well, it's the same idea, right? We have this system of payment and banking and that sort of thing. Like, I think if you want to be a liberty activist, one of the most important and I won't say easy, but kind of easy things you can do is withdraw all your money from banks. I have two friends, my friends that I used to do my podcast with.
Wait a minute. Why would that help anything?
Okay. So you have all your money in a bank. You have a direct deposit from your job. You're in that payroll system, right? That's a way to track and control. Just think if you were suddenly deemed a terrorist under the obscure laws of the Patriot Act, which it doesn't take anything anymore to deem a person that, they could freeze all your accounts, right? So if you've got all your money, you know, I got my money up in my credit union and my paychecks get deposited every week and, you know, I pay my bills and I use my debit card to go grocery shopping and all that. If I'm suddenly deemed a terrorist or a threat or whatever, right?
They you don't have to be deemed a terrorist. You could just be found to have not paid back taxes, and they'll freeze your account and take all your bank accounts.
Or if they say I'm a drug dealer or a myriad of things. You know?
Sometimes they say your money is guilty and has been charged with a crime and is guilty until proven innocent. They're just going to take it.
So they can freeze your accounts, right? And they can cut you off from your funds that you need to sustain your daily life. So if you take all your money out of your bank and you buy prepaid debit cards, you know, the Visa cards, you carry cash on you, you do those sort of things, you take away that control from them.
Are you kidding me? Come on. What's the difference taking your money out of Bank of America and putting it into a Visa card? Aren't they just two branches of the same beast?
Right, but you control it, okay? And you don't have to use the Visa card. That's just an example. I mean, you can carry cash.
Oh, I see, because the Visa card, it doesn't have your name attached to it. It's not an identity thing. So it's not like the government can be like, oh, Chandler can't use his bank account anymore. You can still use your Visa card no matter who you are.
Right, you go to Walmart and you get you put $200. I think they are imposing limits on this now, though. Keep in mind, I mean, used to be those prepaid Visa cards, you could put whatever you wanted. Now I believe, and don't quote me on this, I may be wrong, but I believe it's only $250 now.
But that makes it nearly impossible. I mean, say you got a bill to pay, a hospital bill or some regular bill that exceeds $250.
Okay, hold on. So if that doesn't work, right?
Yeah.
So you got to pay like me. I got to go and pay $300-something for oil to heat my house, right?
Right.
And I don't have a bank account with checks and debit card. So I just go down to the local Rite Aid and I get a money order. I buy
a money order. Okay, there you go.
And I pay 49 cents for the money order,
right?
Not
bad.
And I give that money order that's made directly out to my oil company. Boom. It's just like a check. See, there are alternative systems, but people, and I'm just as guilty of it. I'm not dissing anyone. We put more emphasis on that convenience, right? Of having those bank accounts and having those systems in place. That the convenience would be removed if we removed ourselves from those systems. But if we want to achieve liberty, that's kind of where we need to go.
How much is convenience worth to you?
You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and some of his weird friends. And yes, we're broadcasting this into space.
Worms. Meow, 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 cock-a-doodle-doo. This is Freedom Fiends, and we join you for redemption in the third act, the final act here. I hope we've calmed the hamster in your brain. I know I'm feeling calmer. We were talking about bitcoins and alternative payment methods and how awesome they are and how much freedom there can be. We're going to talk about Roger Ver, Bitcoin Jesus, spotted handing out bitcoins.
Right. So I kind of wanted to tie up the last segment by reiterating the fact that no meaningful change has come without compromise and sacrifice, right?
Amen.
We have convenience and we want more and more convenience, and in this digital age we have so much of a convenience, but this technology also helps to further the current system and keep us, I wouldn't say locked, but entices us to stay in it. And a classic example is, if you follow my Facebook posts, last week I was messing around with my Android phone, rooting it, putting custom ROMs, which are like operating systems, Windows, that sort of thing. And I was doing it for the sole reason that the apps on the phone can access, have certain permissions and can access your phone. And it's just ridiculous.
And you don't want that.
I don't want that, right? So I went and balanced the convenience of having this cell phone with the access to my data. And I went through just a ton of, it was a pain in the butt. Let's just leave it at that. So I came to the conclusion that I have to make certain sacrifices.
Is it even a sacrifice? Because I don't believe in altruism, like people making sacrifices for the greater good or something. I believe in following your rational self-interest.
I think by sacrifice, I mean, if I am to continue using this system, in this case, it was the cell phone.
Yeah.
There were very few applications. Like, I found a firewall that kind of accomplishes what I was trying to do. But if it blocks the transmissions from my phone, so outside sources can't read it, I also can't use those services. So I had to compromise. I had to make a sacrifice. I said, is my privacy worth not using that service? And in most cases, it is. Right? So when we talk about not having social security numbers and creating new systems, there is a certain amount of balancing between convenience and sacrifice. And no meaningful change has ever come without that sacrifice. So when people say, well, things are never going to be that way, you're living in a fantasy world, you're too idealistic. Well, I think you're wrong. We have to try. And we probably will fail, and then we will learn from our mistakes, most of us will, and we will adopt and adapt better systems. But if we take the attitude where things are never going to change, where I'm not going to sacrifice what I have now, then yes, things will not change if you do that, if you take that attitude.
I agree with that. I think one of the most exciting opportunities for people to try something new that's never been done before is the Free State Project, people moving to the same geographic location for liberty. They're all moving to New Hampshire. The goal is to get 20,000 liberty-loving people all to live around each other and get active, and hopefully that will give us a chance at achieving freedom in our lifetime.
And I want to see that Free State Project explode and expand to every state. I'm not moving. I love Maine.
You're close enough. I mean, you're neighbors with New Hampshire.
I know. I go there often.
And New Hampshire, it's one of the Bitcoin meccas in the whole world. I think it's got the longest regular meetup, a Bitcoin meetup in Manchester, New Hampshire. And I want to mention this real quick because we're real close. Roger Ver, Bitcoin Jesus, was spotted handing out Bitcoins in New York City. He's given up his passport. Talk about somebody who is willing to make sacrifices for liberty and make change in the world. He's not able to set foot on U.S. soil, but he won't be stopped. Used a robot to hand out money to people and bring them more freedom.
New systems, baby. New systems.
And the courage to do it.
Yes.
Well, Chandler, thank you for your service tonight. This has been a great episode, man.
I've enjoyed it. Thank you.
Hopefully next time we chat over Feen Phone. That's F-E-E-N phone.com. It's not available yet, but you can donate to make it available. And if you want to support gun rights, hey, check out my website, derekj.me/cc. It's in concealed carry.
Worms.
Well, that does it for tonight. Thank you for your service.
Take care, everyone.
And remember to live free.